Looking for something new? Try fencing, the Olympic and Paralympic sport that mixes speed, strategy, and fun. It's like chess meets cardio. Quick feet, quick decisions, and a satisfying beep when you score a point. Kids, teens, and adults can start anytime. No experience needed, and many clubs have loaner gear. Coaches teach fundamentals and safety from day one. Find a beginner class near you at usafencing.org/tryfencing. That's usafencing.org/tryfencing.
In life's journey, we must seek to reflect, learn, and grow. Welcome to The Road to Rediscovery with your host, Aubrey Johnson.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Road to Rediscovery. I'm your host, Aubrey Johnson. The Road to Rediscovery is about reflecting on past life lessons to learn and grow from them and to take it to the next level and help others who are struggling through dark times. Now, I'm sure you all have heard the phrase, can't see the forest from the trees. Well, today, we are going to learn how to see that forest, all right? When we're trying our best to navigate through the rough waters of our lives with seemingly endless dark days, we can sometimes become overtaken by that present moment of despair and anguish, so much to the point that we often forget some of the very fundamentals that can actually help us turn things around. One of those is laughter. Another is play. My special guest offers a refreshing and innovative perspective to playing as a means of team development, improved productivity, and addressing toxicity in the workplace. He's an international speaker, having spoken at conferences such as Inbound and South by Southwest. His work has been featured in the New York Times and CNN, and he was selected by Engagedly as one of the top 100 HR influencers of 2020. I am so excited about this conversation because his work is about rediscovery in its truest sense. And through his company, Rediscover Your Play, he is making it happen everywhere he goes. Ladies and gentlemen, it gives me great pleasure to welcome Jeff Harry. Jeff, hey, welcome to the show, man. How you doing today?
Oh, I'm so excited about this conversation. Let's get into it.
Oh, man. Oh, it is great to have you here. I'm equally excited and I'm really pumped up, man. The listeners are really, really in for a treat. So let's start by just asking, what was life like for Jeff growing up? And what was your inspiration and what led to your inspiration behind the launch of this amazing practice?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So I first simply resonated with your podcast because we both have rediscover in the title of our work, right?
That's right.
So, you know, and to go back to what caused me to rediscover, it really started off when I was 8 years old. I remember seeing the movie Big. Remember Big with Tom Hanks?
Yep, sure.
So I saw that when I was a kid, and I remember that he got to play with toys for a living. And I was like, oh man, that's a job? And he was dancing on that piano, you know, and then all of a sudden the CEO of the company is like, hey, you're really fun. You know, let me offer you a job. So right. I literally went down to FAO Schwartz like that week, you know, with my family and danced on the piano thinking like someone was going to discover me. And that did not happen. So then I came home and I started writing toy companies and I was writing them on my word processor. Like that's dating me, right? Mm. And I would send them like multiple letters like a week. So I was spamming before spam was a thing. They thought I was an adult because I would type it out. And then they would just send me all these rejection letters back, but I just kept doing it.
Yeah.
Until a toy company actually wrote me back and told me to go to mechanical engineering in sophomore year. And I should have never listened to them, but whatever, you know. So I go to college, I graduate, I get in the toy industry. And I don't know if you've ever like gotten what you thought you wanted and then you have it. And then you're so disappointed with what it is. So I thought I would be surrounded by toys. I thought I would be surrounded by people that were fun and exciting and high-fiving and kids and all that. And it felt like we could have been selling microwaves or like, you know, like hand towels for all. It didn't matter.
Right, right.
And I was in New York and I was like, and then 9/11 happened and I was like, I don't want to die in a cubicle. And I remember, you know, moving to the Bay Area, to San Francisco Bay Area. I lived in Oakland. Mm-hmm. And I found an organization that was teaching kids engineering with Lego. And there were only 7 people that were already there, you know, a nerdy group of people. And I helped them grow this organization over the next like 15 years. And we went from 7 to 400 people. And we taught 100,000 kids a year. And the whole time, we were just playing and making things up. We had no idea what we were doing. Really? You know, we would pick cities because they were fun. Yeah. We would, you know, we had no business plan. We hire people because they were fun and making it up. And then Silicon Valley, a lot of companies, Silicon Valley noticed us because we were so large. And they were like, hey, do you do team building events for adults? And we were like, of course we do. Even though we didn't, know what we were doing, you know, but we said yes. And then while I was running a lot of these workshops where they were like, yeah, we want to be innovative and creative and collaborative.
Right.
I realized a lot of the environment that they claimed they wanted, they had not created. It was not a place for risk-taking. It was not a place to play. It was not a place for innovation. And in many ways, they weren't dealing with bigger issues like toxicity at work, how to deal with racism at work. How do you talk about racism at work? How do you deal with office politics, the meeting before the meeting after the meeting? How do you deal with your inner critic? You know, all of this stuff that they just weren't addressing. So I created Rediscover Your Play to address a lot of those pain points for organizations, and then also help people rediscover who they are in a playful way.
Beautiful, beautiful. Man, I totally can relate to those experiences that you have where, you know, you really build up and have an imagination for what a certain job or a certain role or an event would be, right? And then you actually fall into that event or fall into that role, and it's not all you cracked it up to be, you know, over the years, right? So you know, just flying by the seat of your pants, doing a lot of just random decision making in who you do business with, who you interact with, who you hire with, and so forth. It sounds like I don't know, it was just like a beautiful recipe for things coming together by just playing.
Yeah.
Would that be accurate?
Yeah, it's playing, following my curiosity, not judging so much, right? Not looking for the right way or the wrong way.
Right.
And I think that's really important, especially during 2020, where, you know, we all had a vision of what 2020 was going to be.
That's right.
And like, none of that happened. Like, it all went, you know, you have to let go of all of that.
Yes.
And I think a lot of people, the part that is like really rough on people is I talk about this a lot, that like adults are so fixated on results, right? And expectations are such the thief of joy that if you're not willing to let go of what you thought 2020 was going to be, then you can't create the next great thing in the last 2 months that you have in 2020. And what's so resilient about kids is like they play something and when they're done, they move on, you know? So for us to be able to let go, like I even do this workshop with my friend Lauren Yee, where we literally have people write down what they expected 2020 would be. And then we have them fold it up into a paper airplane and literally let it go, because it's like, you gotta let it go right now, because you can't do anything new until you let it go. And that's like, I feel with any person that's trying to get back on the road to rediscovery, is they have to let go of what the old story is in order to build a new story.
Oh, for sure, for sure. And what a metaphor, right? Just writing down what your expectations were for 2020, making a paper airplane and just letting it go. Yeah, you really can't move on to building bigger and better things until you let that part go, for sure. And man, one thing that, again, resonated with me that you just mentioned is, you know, going into 2020, I had these huge thoughts, right? I think a lot of people did, because, you know, just 2020, 2020, usually that represents, you know, a clear vision, right? 2020 vision, which means epic things are going to happen. Well, little did we know that they were epic things in a different direction, not necessarily all positive, right?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So to me, man, that is absolutely tremendous. Now, one thing that you bring to the table, Jeff, that I just find absolutely fascinating, okay, is helping people get to the root of their issues, helping teams get to the root of their issues with play, right? Addressing hard conversations, things like racism in the workplace, right? Things like harassment, you know, that can be tough. Those conversations can be tough. But somehow you just bring the concept of play into it without anyone losing sight on the objective of play. Now that's a tough balance to strike, I would imagine, because and here's an example that I have, and just tell me how you would respond to something like this.
Sure.
So you have a sales team. Okay, and the sales team has hired you to come up with a play workshop, a workshop with play to help address a strong over competitiveness that is causing toxicity in within their group.
Right.
Because in sales and marketing, it can get quite competitive.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are competitive amongst each other within, and you're on the same team, then, you know, that can kind of, taint the environment, so to speak. And play can sometimes be competitive.
Mm-hmm.
So how can you incorporate play in a workshop, say something like that, where everyone still keeps their eye on the prize, they still know what the objective is without losing sight of that, right? And not be so over competitive during the play. Does that?
Yeah, I think I would first talk to like the team lead, right, or the sales, to the person that's driving this, and really make sure that we're on the same page. Like, what is it that you want to get out of this?
Yeah.
You know, how do you want your team to act differently? Oh, yeah. You want them to act more like a team? Okay, well let's first explore this. Do you have a brilliant jerk? Right. And I refer to the brilliant jerk as, like, Simon Sinek mentions this. It's usually the top performer that is bringing in the most amount of revenue. Mm-hmm. But in the process of bringing the most amount of revenue, they're also very cocky. And they also are super rude to everyone else and be like, okay, what's more important, the brilliant jerk or the team? Even before I would start the workshop, just like understanding from that team lead, what's important. And the reason I bring this up is because Simon Sinek was interviewing the Navy SEALs, and he talked about how they will never recruit the brilliant jerk. And the reason why is it destroys team chemistry.
Yes.
And if you think about this in like terms of sports, think of baseball, like Alex Rodriguez, when he was on the Texas Rangers, like really toxic for the team. As soon as he left, they started excelling. Same thing with Ken Griffey Jr. when he was on the Seattle Mariners. Not bad guys, just not good for that team. And as soon as they left, other people could step up. So, like, so first I would approach it from that point. And then I would also approach it from, how's the turnover, right?
Right.
Sherm did a study recently, October of 2019, where they found out that $223 billion has been lost just in Fortune 500 companies alone in the last 5 years, billion, because of toxic people. And that's only the companies that are willing to admit it, not even the companies that not are willing to admit it. So again, I would go to that team lead and be like, how much turnover are you dealing with?
Yeah.
Okay, do you want to change that? If you want to change that, let's explore what that looks like. So then I think a lot of times with sales teams, you know, or just teams in general, they don't have a lot of practice having hard conversations.
Right.
There's never a time where the manager, when they get promoted, are like, okay, now you're the manager. Here's how you lead. You know, here's right. how you have a hard. So yeah. people are just making it up. So what we create in our workshops is like, how do you confront someone about a toxic issue? How do right. I go up to Chad and yep. say, hey, Chad, you know, when you cut off Samantha in the middle of the meeting, mm-hmm. you are making it seem like you don't want to hear what she has to say. And you're communicating to the rest of the team. You don't want to hear it. What we have to say either. Mm. Is that your intent? Oh, it's not right. your intent? Okay, great. Yeah. And then if it was your intent and then you're like, don't care, then I need to go to the team leader, the supervisor, and be like, hey, is this what our mission values match up with? You know, right. like right. if we're trying to hit metrics, is it yep. better to raise all boats and make sure all of the sales team is supporting one another and being like, yo, let me get your back. Oh, you got sick. I'll call right. your salesperson. I'll call your clients while you're gone because it's all about us coming up with a sales goal that we all get rewarded by, right? Let's right. figure out ways in which we can all be rewarded instead of just rewarding the top person and letting go of the worst person.
Yes.
Like, how do we create an environment that is supportive of one another and actually has a little bit more humanity, especially right. during these COVID times, instead of mm-hmm. pitting each other against one another, when frankly, you're already competing with so many competitors already, why would you want to create internal competition? So that I would be putting all those things out there, both in when I'm talking to the team lead and how we approach the actual workshop.
That's a great approach. I really, really appreciate you sharing that insight, Jeff, because those are questions they're going to have to answer even before you launch into a workshop, it sounds like, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's go to the other side of it, all right? On the other side of it, the workshop has been done. It's been set. It's been done. It's been executed. You know, When you're working with businesses, obviously the top brass is usually all about the bottom line, right? Mm-hmm. They're concerned about the bottom line, meaning in this case, how effective has your workshop been in right. helping the team develop, right? And move the needle?
Right.
So what are the, and you talked about metrics a minute ago, what are some of the methods or behavior changes that you consider or your clients consider to be the measure for success of your play?
Right. So some of the measures of success, and a lot of this we do through surveys and just checking back in with people, is mm-hmm. how are communication levels? How mm-hmm. are turnover levels? How are the team meetings?
Right.
Are people now leaving more energized from these meetings or are they not? Is right. that toxic person still acting the way they act? And the fact is, and let's be honest, it's not like a quick fix. None of this is. It's all about us asking the right questions to start the conversations, but then they have to do a lot of the work, right?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
when you're dealing with a toxic person at work, it might mm-hmm. take a year before they either change their behavior or leave, you know?
Sure.
You know, so you have to like really be open to the process. It's all about the process. Focus on the process, right?
Right.
So turnover, communication, some companies measure it by like, it's not happiness levels, but like appreciation for their work, right?
Right, right?
If we're working on a workshop that's all about getting people in a state of flow,
yeah,
asking them, hey, how much more of that zone of genius work are you doing? Is it more than you were doing before this date, right?
I see.
Like really see. Small things, because I think a lot of times we're like thinking there's a magic bullet, and there never is, because you have to do the work.
Right.
But there are signs of progress. And a lot of the signs of progress, even during COVID times, is like, can I ask this person to get this other person's back and they'll do it? That's a really good sign.
Gotcha.
You know, is my boss asking me how I'm doing and checking in with me instead of just focusing on whether I made my quota for this quarter?
Right. I see. A level of engagement, right? And are we sustaining that level of engagement among the team, among the individuals on the team, you know, over time?
And a good measure is, are we doing that even when it's tough? because when it's things are going well, of course you're like, everyone's in a good mood and hey, the revenues are doing great. But like during this time where there's a lot of like recession in the experience of a lot of companies, it's like, how are you operating during that time? Are you recoiling or are you being more transparent with your team and being like, hey, I don't know what's going to happen next, but we're going to figure it out together.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Yeah. And that's a reassuring feeling that I think the team members get, you know, as long as they know that their leader is engaged and aware, you know, and has full visibility and awareness of where their team is. You know, in that current state, that current time, right? Whether it's good or bad, just having the awareness, because then you can move in the direction towards development, right?
Exactly.
No, I'm with you. So let's talk about just the fundamentals of play, right? You talk a lot about, you know, just working with clients to just rediscover their childhood, right? And just some of the games they played as a child. How did you feel as you were playing that game? You know, what if the game didn't work? Then what did you do then as a kid and so forth? So in a lot of cases, especially as children, you know, with games and everything, there's a degree of humor. Okay. And a degree of just, okay, let me put it this way. All right. Ever since childhood, okay, personally, I've been a big fan of humor. I love to laugh and I will go and tread in the waters of goofiness, you know, for the sake of having a good laugh. Now, never at the expense of others. Okay. Right. But I would tread in that area of goofiness, you know, just to have a good laugh, you know, and to share that laugh with someone. So I've had friends of mine often tell me that I'm weird, you know, that I act weird and so forth. And I read one of your blog entries, I think called Embrace Your Weird.
Ah, W-Y-R-D. Yes.
Yeah. And I think there's a sense of vulnerability that one must have to actually act goofy in a playful way or even to be weird or demonstrate weirdness. You know, but at the same time with vulnerability, I think over time that person also enjoys the freedom that comes with it as well. And I just wanted your thoughts on that.
Yeah. So I needed to pull this document up for it. So the modern word for weird, W-E-I-R-D, comes from the ancestral term weird, W-Y-R-D, which literally means that which has become. Mm-hmm. Well, roughly speaking, weird translates into what we're evolving to. Like, are we becoming? Right. You know, and what's funny about that word weird is a lot of times people are like, oh, you're strange. Oh, you're, you know, that's like whatever you're doing is wrong. I love to talk to people about why adults don't play enough. And the best way in which I describe why adults don't play enough is 148,000 no's. And what I mean by that is by the time this professor did this study and found by the time we're 18, we've heard the word no 148,000 times, at least that much. And the amount of yeses is under 10,000. So you're hearing no that many times. Then on top of that, you're should on all the time when you're a kid. You should do this, you should do that. You're should on by teachers, you're should on by your parents, you're should on by adults, right? Then you go to school where they tell you that you have to raise your hand, that you have to ask for permission all the time. And then when you're in your teens, you get social media where it's constantly telling you you're not enough. And then while all of this is going on, someone is always telling you you're too mischievous, you're too much, you're too weird. So knowing all that, let's first have compassion for ourselves, right? Knowing all that, anyone that is embracing that weird, nerdy part of themselves, it's such a freaking rebellious act that you're doing. It's such a revolutionary act for you to fight all those societal norms that are telling you to be normal, right? And being like, no, I reject that. I reject this notion that I have to be like everybody else. I reject the notion that I have to have the same boring conversations. I want to be goofy. I want to be silly. And what is goofier when someone comes up and is like, why are you being so silly? What they're really saying is like, why are you having so much fun? I'm not having that much fun, but it seems like you're having that much fun. And I'm jealous. But instead of selling all that, saying all that, they just say, why are you being so silly? You're just so weird right now. So I started to take that on as like a mantle whenever someone would say I was weird, especially in high school and, you know, college or just whenever, even when I was a kid, because I was just like, it's fun. It's so much fun to be weird and explore the world this way, then do it in the normal way, because I'm noticing you're not having a lot of fun in the normal way.
No, so true. You're not. And I don't know, it's just a feeling of release when you demonstrate your weirdness and you're not, like you said, following those societal norms, saying that, okay, you're of this race, you're of this gender, you're of this age range, how you should be.
That's why I hate all those listicles.
Yeah.
You know, those listicles that are like, by the time you're 30, you should have done this. By the time you're 40, you should. What are you talking about? Who's writing this? A 20-year-old? Like what is this is like, again, telling me how I should be living my life, you know? And I want to put this out to your listeners. Like, no one knows what they're doing. Nobody knows what we're doing. We're all making it up as we go along, which is fine. But when someone claims that they know everything, when someone claims them as being an expert, especially during the pandemic, when I would hear people being like, well, you need to pivot your business, or you need to do this, you need to do that. And I was like, were you around in 1918? Like, were you around during the last pandemic? Because if you weren't, then shut up, because you don't have anything else to say besides maybe something that works, that has worked out for you. And that's you can share it as like, hey, this worked out for me. Maybe it works out for you. But when you're doing it like, this is the way, then it's just like, come on, dude. Like, you need to just, you need to check yourself, you know? Totally. And then tying back into like the idea of play, like the way I define play, because I defined it in a very broad sense, right? Yeah. I define play as any joyful act where you're fully present in the moment, where it's purposeless, where you're not focused on a result. You're just fully in love with the process. You don't have anxiety about the future. You don't have regrets about the past. You're just fully in your zone of genius. And a lot of companies would refer to that as flow. Like, you're in a state of flow, right?
Right. Yeah.
And then breaking down the brains, or just a little bit of the brain science behind it, is usually your prefrontal cortex is in a beta mode, where you have your inner critic, where you have your self-consciousness, where you're protecting yourself.
Yeah.
But when you get into a state of flow, as Dr. Csikszentmihalyi would say, is what's happening is your skill level, your skill level is meeting the challenge perfectly. So a lot of times, and you set this up in a flow chart of like, when you don't have a lot of skill, but the challenge is really hard, you have a ton of anxiety, like when you first start a job, right?
Yep.
But when you have a ton of skill and you've been doing the job forever, you're bored, right? So, between anxiety and boredom is that flow state. And what's happening when you're in that flow state is something referred to as transient hypnofrontality, where a part of your prefrontal cortex is actually shutting down, and it's distorting time. So that's why you forget about time. You're just like, oh, this is just amazing.
Yeah.
And then also your inner critic starts to dissipate. It starts to disappear. Mm-hmm. And then your implicit mind appears, and you become highly creative, and you get a shot of dopamine, and you become highly curious. And then you are open to all these possibilities, unlike most adults where they're so fixated on one result. I need this result.
Right,
you're instead curious like a kid, and you just see all the opportunities. in front of you. And you know you've been in that flow state when you like travel and you're saying yes to things and you're willing to hop on a moped that takes you to a deserted island where you are at a party where you meet the love of your life. You're just saying yes to everything, right?
Yeah.
And that is the state that I want to help people get more into.
That's beautiful. But people have to understand that it's a process.
It's a process, yeah.
It's a process to get into that flow state. And once you're in that flow state, and this is a question I have for you, Jeff, it almost sounds like there's some correlation between the flow state, okay, your abilities and the challenge. There's a sweet spot there. Mm-hmm. And I'm a big proponent of mindfulness and mm-hmm. mindful meditation and breathing, and a lot of that has to deal with being in the present moment, right?
Yeah.
So taking past thoughts and impressions prior to going into that moment, mm-hmm. Just throwing them out. Any future thoughts or things that you want to think about in the future, just throwing that out and being in the present moment.
Right.
But again, it doesn't happen at a flip of a switch or a snap of a finger. It's a process that you fall into that state, mm-hmm. and then all of these revelations start to come. These epiphanies.
Right, and
yeah,
and
there's
love
some correlation.
Yeah, no, and I love that you mentioned the mindfulness and the calmness piece, because it reminds me of my play mentor Gwen Gordon that says before you can play, you have to learn how to soothe yourself.
Yes.
And you adopt how you soothe yourself from the person that nurtured you and took care of you the most. So if they didn't know how to calm and soothe themselves, then they pass that along to you. So you might be taking on some of that trauma.
Right.
So you have to explore, how do I get calm? When do I have my most some of my best ideas? Oh, it's when I'm in the shower. Oh, it's when I'm walking. Oh, it's when I'm doing this thing or that thing.
Yeah.
Ah, so I've... Because you can't be frustrated or fearful or have anxiety and then be like, are you ready to play? Because you're like, no, I'm scared right now. Like, I'm not ready at all to play. But if you're able to soothe and calm yourself, after I tell people to do that, then I say, which is ironic, but I say to them, get bored. Yeah. Now it's your opportunity to get bored, which means don't allow so much information to come in. Social media, shut it off for a couple hours. Stop bitching watching Netflix for a couple hours. Get your mind, as you were saying, mindfulness and calmness to quiet your mind so you can hear that inner curiosity, that inner child, do that little whisper, as Elizabeth Gilbert says. It's not this loud voice, but this inner whisper that says things to you like, hey, start that podcast. Hey, wouldn't it be cool to make that video? Hey, wouldn't it be cool to reach out to that person you've been wanting to reach out to for over 6 months, but you've been putting it off because it's super scary? Like, and then it really doesn't matter what you're doing, right? To get in that flow state, you're simply just exploring that curiosity. And then you realize, oh, wow, that wasn't that hard to send that email to that person. What else do I want to do that's also fun and curious and delicious? And then you follow that and you follow that.
Yes.
And that is how you follow that road to rediscovery to figure out who you are.
Beautiful. Beautiful. I agree 100%, man. I agree, because, you know, there's a lot to be said about, you know, when we are in the present moment and we're going through just trying to force ourselves, and you can't force yourself when you're in the present moment to stay in the present moment or force those epiphanies to come on to you. I mean, it's something that has to like almost organically happen.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like, you know, Gwen Gordon always says, like, you know, the freedom to play also provides you the freedom not to play, right?
Yes.
Like you're on the playground and some kids are playing and some kids are not, you know?
Right.
And
right.
you can't be like, okay, I want to get into a flow state right now. Let me get into it. Like, you create the atmosphere where it may happen or it may not happen. But even if you're just creating the atmosphere where you're calm, where you're bored or like listening to yourself.
Yeah.
Things will come from it, even if it's not the thing. And I think that's another thing about it where like people were like, well, I need to get into it. I need to get into it right now. No, that is the adult inner critic talking, which is like so focused on results and being like, I need to get in this flow state so I can write this amazing thing. And it's like, no, you're missing the point. It's about the process. It's about falling in love with being present, falling in love with being comfortable in your own skin and just sitting in that. Can you sit in that instead of constantly trying to impress? I always ask people something, you know, when they're like, well, I don't know, am I listening to my inner curiosity or am I listening to somebody else? And I always ask people to ask themselves, who are you trying to impress?
Right.
And if you're trying to impress somebody, especially someone that you're not going to care about in a year, why are you doing it?
Yeah.
Because really the only person you should be trying to impress is yourself, because the people that love you are going to like you and love you regardless. So if anything, like, let's stop trying to people please and like impress people that we don't even really care about. And let's focus more on just like giving more self-compassion and providing more opportunities for us to play, because your most favorite moments in your life are play moments. Why wouldn't you want to have more of those?
And these are elements that we can control.
Uh-huh.
You know, if we direct our efforts towards improving those elements that we can control, and not be so focused on elements that we can't control, like someone else's thoughts or feelings of us, right?
Right. And I mean, and let's just even talk about like results, right? And what is considered success? I talk a lot about affluent deadness, right? Mm-hmm. I came up with this term affluent deadness recently because I know a lot of people that are super successful. I know a lot of millionaires. I know some people that are what you would say famous.
Yeah.
Not a lot of them are happy. Like they have what the rest of the world or the rest of America wants. Yeah. Like I know people that can travel the world 10 times over. They can buy anything they want or have the fame that they, when they come out, people know them.
Sure.
I've seen them when they're not posting on Instagram about how great their life is. They're not as excited or happy or gleeful as everyone thinks they are. And when I think of someone that has affluent deadness, what they have is, I notice that if it's regarding money, they're like, they're either worried about losing their money or they're worried that someone has more money than them, or they're just bored because they thought when they got all this money that that would bring them all the happiness and joy and fulfillment that they had. And it's not. It
doesn't translate.
And then they're posting on Instagram about how happy they are when they're not. And they're selling this story to the rest of us. And then we're all rushing to get up there as well, only to get up there to realize that is not bringing us happiness either. So it's like, why are we all lying to ourselves instead of more focusing on how can I have social affluency? How can I have affluency when it comes to impact, like to having deeper connections in my life. When people talk about their top five regrets in their life, two of them are I work too much. And another one is I tried to impress too many people. I tried to do what other people, I tried to do instead of doing what I want to do. Right.
Yeah.
And like, you can't take it all with you. So just like the win of life is being able to enjoy being in the moment and really cherishing each and every one of those moments. You know, I look at Chadwick Boseman, for example, right? Dude, in the last like 2 years of his life, two Avenger movies, one Black Panther movies, you know, 21, a bunch of other things. But even how he acted, if you watch how he acted, he was all in. And then when he wasn't acting, he was at a cancer ward, not bringing attention to himself, but a cancer ward for children, giving them love and attention. So like he was living his life to the fullest, if that is any indication of how one should live their life, look at him. So let's learn from that. Let's learn from other people's examples of how to truly live.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Chadwick Boseman was a prime example of that, right? I mean, living and being totally zoned in, you know, during the recordings of the filming of these big movies. And like you said, helping others and being a service, having a heart for service for others, mm-hmm. you know, who are in the hospital suffering from cancer and other terminal diseases, right? In a selfless way. He's a great example of that. I appreciate you you sharing
yeah,
that.
Yeah, well, and imagine when a patient said to him, mm-hmm. you know, I know I'm going to die soon, but I'm just waiting for Black Panther to come out. Like, imagine that. Imagine then him taking that energy. Like, one thing that I find really powerful that my friend Jen Abels told me is, mm-hmm. so she ran a nonprofit called Soldiers Who Salsa. Right.
Okay. Yeah.
And it was veterans that were amputees mm-hmm. that, and she helped them dance to like rediscover like how to dance or dance for the first time.
Right.
And what she remembered is like during that process, and she went to the White House for it and, you know, in Afghanistan, all these places, but she remembered how like she took her love of dance and almost was like, here's this ball of energy that I have, you know, I'm going to hand it off to, you know, a couple of veterans that are like, that are struggling with looking for hope right now. Right. They don't have a lot of hope. And they took it and they ran with it. And then most recently she was not, you know, she finished Soldiers for Salsa and she was trying to figure out what was next. And she was like, I don't know what to do next with my life. And I want to have an impact. And I'm like, I'm just kind of struggling on who I am. And what was ironic was at that very moment, she would get emails from some of these veterans that were like, hey, you changed my life. I started dancing and that's how I met my wife. I started dancing and that's how I took risks in all these other ways. And they were almost giving her ball of energy back and being like, oh, look, you know, I have all this now. Here's some more for you. So it's like when we're able to do that for each other, it's such a powerful exchange. Yes. That's why I love this podcast, because it's people sharing stories about pain and suffering and getting through it, and then taking that energy ball and handing to someone else and being like, share my story as well, because that will have a ripple effect with everyone else's story and also prove to people that they're not alone and that they can get through it if other people can get through it, right?
Spot on. Now, that's the type of perpetuation we want, you know? That's the cycle that we want. Like you said, for those who are going through tough times, who have gone through tough times, they've turned things around, they're thriving, and now they're reaching out, helping other people, right? Mm-hmm. Or people who have helped others years ago, mm-hmm. you know, and you don't hear from them for years. And then you're trying to figure out, okay, what's the next direction that I want to take in my life? Mm-hmm. And you have that uncertainty. And then you have unsolicited, you have those individuals coming back to you and saying, you know what, that salsa class was a pivotal point in my life that made and caused a lot of changes for the better for me, right? And so that energy is fed back, like you said. Okay, that's the positive type of perpetuation, in my opinion, on the totally different end of the spectrum from the previous perpetuation that we were talking about, right? With the social mask that people want to portray themselves as when they take pictures and post them on social media, when they post their statuses on social media or how they're feeling. And then, you know, trying to reach a certain level in social media that is in a lot of cases unattainable.
Yep.
And it's that false impression that people see and they think, oh, that person's doing great. I want to move in that direction too.
Yep.
And that the person who posted it isn't even there, you know?
Yep.
So to me, that's like a far on the opposite end of the spectrum when it comes to a crazy cycle, when it comes to perpetuation and the road to rediscovery in how we help others struggling and uplift others after we've gone through dark times. That's the cycle we want to be on.
Exactly. And as my friend Tashawn says a lot of times, you're never going to get enough likes to feel love. You're just never going to get enough likes. You're never going to have enough followers. You're just, it's never enough when you're focused on the results to bring you happiness and fulfillment, right?
Yes.
Because
yes.
because sometimes you'll get those results and sometimes you won't. But yeah. if you're just happy with the present moment in time,
yes.
then you can always find fulfillment. You can always find joy. And I say this a lot, and I refer to it as goodwill hunting people. So I'm going to yeah. share this with your listeners, you know, especially the ones that know goodwill hunting. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a poignant part of the movie that I really loved. And for people that haven't seen Goodwill Hunting, like, it's Matt Damon, Ben Affleck, it's their first movie that they ever did yep. together.
Great film.
Amazing film. And yeah, Robin Williams, and they're at that construction site, if you remember that, you know,
yeah.
And Matt's a genius and he could get any job in the world at any think tank. And he's sitting there doing construction with Ben Affleck. And he yep. says to him, he's just like, you know, we're going to raise our kids and watch them play baseball at Foley Field. Mm-hmm. And Ben Affleck turns to him and he goes, if you're here in 20 years, I'm going to kill you. Like, I'm going to literally kill you.
That.
As right. your best friend, I'm going to kill you. And Matt Damon goes, what? I owe it to myself? And he's like, no, you don't owe it to yourself. You owe it to me. You owe it to all these other
That's
people
right.
at this construction site, because any of us would give anything to be and to have what you have. You are right. sitting on a winning lottery ticket and you're too scared to cash it in. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I share that is, like, every one of your listeners is sitting on a winning lottery ticket. The thing that they think is most weird about them is also their superpower. It is the thing that can impact so many other people's lives. And when they show up fully and embrace their weird and embrace their nerdiness and embrace who they are, they give permission for other people to show up. There's someone right now waiting for you to show up so they can show up, right? Yes. And Brene yes. Brown talks about this, where if you don't pursue right. that inner lottery ticket, if you don't pursue that inner curiosity, it eats away with you. It eats away at you. Like, yeah. so you either pursue it and, like, really discover who you are through that, or the multiple things, maybe it's not just one thing, right?
Right.
Or you let it eat at you it could destroy you. The thing that most makes you most creative and most powerful could destroy you if you don't explore it. So, like, that is the challenge that I have for your listeners is, like, what is your winning lottery ticket? What are the things that you know are you? And if you don't know what that is, here's a play experiment that I have a lot of people do. A lot of my clients do this, is I have them reach out to their closest friends, maybe 3 to 4 people, more right. if you want. And you ask them these two questions. You ask them, first, what value do I bring to your life?
Right, right.
Like, why are we friends? Like, what do I do for you? Yeah. Right? Because a lot of times you forget and then you hear it back and you're like, oh, wow, I didn't even realize I do that for people. That's amazing. And then the second question I ask them to ask is, when have you seen me most alive? Like, when have you seen me most joyful, most playful, most present? And when right. you hear all that feedback and you write it all down and you look at it, and you find out what people value about you, and you find out what makes you most alive, or what people have seen you when you, the answer's right there. That inner lottery ticket answer is right there. And then all you need to do is follow that curiosity to pursue it. And that's how you get on that road to rediscover who you are.
That's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. And I completely agree, Jeff. I really do. There's some things that you touched on that I just wanted to kind of recall and just reemphasize for the listeners' benefit. Okay. First thing, I am so glad that you walked us through that exercise. Okay. Because one thing that I was hoping to ask you that fortunately, I mean, you went ahead and shared it with us, and I'm so thankful for that, is you work with a lot of teams, you have workshops with groups, you know, but I wanted to break this down to the individual level, right? Mm-hmm. For an individual, because you know what? That weirdness, that maybe that lottery ticket that they're sitting on, inadvertently. They don't know that it is a lottery ticket, but they know there's some part of them that's weird because they're repeatedly told that by their peers.
Yep.
Well, you know, there's a lot of people who are going through dark days and having just tremendous despair because they're wallowing in that weirdness, and it's giving a bad or negative connotation because of how it was communicated to them by their friends, right? And so the exercise that you just outlined for us is a great individual level type of exercise to understand your worth. You know, and to ask, you know, how do I add value in your life? When have you seen me most alive? You know, and that sort of thing. And that's something that I really want the listeners to understand that you've just explained that will help get them out of that rut and realize that that weirdness is not a curse, but it's a gift.
It's
a gift, right?
Right. And Will Smith talks about this, especially after he leaped out of that helicopter to do that bungee jump.
You know, about the other side of fear.
On that opposite side of fear is everything you've been looking for.
Yeah.
You know, but you have to go through it. Like that is the scary cavern. So you have a choice. You could binge watch through your whole life. You totally could. And no judgment if that's what you want to do and you feel like that brings you happiness. But I would challenge you to be like, does it really bring you happiness? Or are you kind of bored after a while? You can only watch so many episodes or so many movies, you know? Or is it worth exploring that creative, quiet, inner, nerdy weirdness, that curious thing, and just seeing where it takes you? And I was asked on this in a recent interview where someone was like, well, how do I know if it's, you know, if it's my inner curiousness or I'm just being wishy-washy, like if I don't like it, you know, I don't want to be flaky. And I was like, well, it sounds like you're shitting on yourself right now. And
yeah,
I remember going to a winery once and I was talking to the guy and I was like, you know what? I don't know anything about wine, dude. And he goes, you know, if you like the wine, you keep drinking it. If you don't like it, you stop. And that's the same thing with this. You follow that inner curiosity. Like, let's say you're like, ooh, I want to make a video. Ooh, how did that feel? Yeah. Ooh, that was fun. I'll keep doing it. Oh, I want to make more videos. Actually, now it's not that fun. Oh, let me do this. Yeah. Just like we did as kids. Yes. When we would go play tag, we wouldn't even introduce ourselves to another kid. We'd just be like, what are you playing, tag? Oh, sweet. And then when I got bored, I just left. You know, it's just like, it's that organic. You know, and so let go of the results and be willing to just play in the playground, which is life, and see where this might take you.
Right. And you know, that's something I wanted to know as far as when you work with your clients, okay, as you're about to embark on a workshop. Mm-hmm. Now, from what I understand, there's some degree of walking your clients through reflecting on their own childhood when they played.
Yeah.
Asking them, how did they feel as a child? What were they feeling like and going through as a child when they play the game? If one game didn't seem to materialize or it ended, then you played a different game and that sort of thing. And what was revealed when they played that exercise as a child, right?
Yeah, so there's an interesting exercise that, or workshop that my colleague Lauren Yee and I came up with called Your Future is Where Your Fun Is. And we clearly stated this, and this kind of comes from this play guru, Kevin Carroll, who's amazing, by the way, and his story is phenomenal. But he would talk about how like, the future is where the fun is. Like who's having the most fun? That's the organization you want to be a part of, or those are the organizations you want to be because they're adaptable. They're not the blockbusters, you know, where they're like, we're not going to change. And then you die. Right.
Yeah.
But they're enjoying the future. Well, how do you explore the future? Well, let's go back to the past. Yeah. So what we do is we help people explore what was one of the things they loved to do most as a kid. Like, what did you love to do most as a kid?
Well, I love playing football, hide and seek, red light, green light, yellow light, stop.
Sweet. So let's break down like hide and seek and red light, green light. Why did you love those games in particular? What was it about those games? What was it about the like values of the games? What was it? Creativity, experience? Like what was it that you liked?
Yeah, I think it was experience. It was those games involved larger numbers of people versus just one versus the other. Yeah.
Got it. So, okay. Yeah. So it involved a lot of people being able to play together, like a lot of connection. What else?
Right. It also involved just wonderment.
Nice.
You know, wonderment with hide and seek. It was wondering if I'm it,
right?
Can I find someone hiding? And if I'm hiding, wondering if they'll find me.
Right.
You know? So yeah, the wonderment was another element that was
important. Ooh, so I love that. So like it was bigger than you. It was about connection. It was about wonderment, right? So we would take those aspects and be like, those are your play values.
Okay.
How do you incorporate wonderment and connection and things that are bigger than you now in the work that you do now? Like what do you, when you think of those, what ties into that around the work you do now?
Oh, well, I think it ties into just about every element of my job, working in HR and talent development and, you know, working in new hire orientation. You know, we have a whole team. We welcome the new hires. We have a lot of interactivity when it comes to, you know, giving them orientation, allowing them the best opportunity, put the best foot forward, learning and awareness. So
I love all that. And also your podcast, dude, like there's something powerful. Your podcast is bigger than you, right? Yep. It's about something so much bigger than you. It's about connection. It's about wonderment. And you're like curious to hear people's story and then amplify those stories. So it's just, so what we challenge people to do when we do a process like that is then we ask them of the work that you're doing, how much of your play values are incorporated into that work?
Okay.
And can you do more of that type of work? Because that is your, that is your flow state work. That is your zone of genius work, as Gay Hendricks talks about, right? Like Gay Hendricks talks about your zone of incompetence, the stuff you're not good at, zone of competence, things you're like average at, zone of greatness, which are the things that you're like good at and you get a lot of praise for, but it's not what you really want to do. And then your zone of genius, which is the stuff where you forget about time, where you're just like, you would do it for free, right? And if you can incorporate those play values into your work more, even if you're just doing it 5 to 10% more a week, it has a ripple effect on all of your other work, all the work that you don't like to do. And then all of a sudden you're doing exponentially better because you are doing more of the stuff that is the root core of who you are.
Ah, I see. I see. So, so after a play workshop, what is it that your clients tell you when it comes to reflecting on that play experience in the workshop? Do they tell you that they felt the same elements as they did when they were a child during play?
Sometimes I think I've gotten a lot of feedback. I just ran a workshop for a biotech company and a lot of the immediate feedback was like, man, I have never thought about that. Or I forgot the last time I thought about what I liked to do as a kid, or it was so interesting to hear what my colleague likes to do in comparison to what I like to do. There was this one person that shared how she was like, well, when I was a kid, I loved to be a teacher. So I would create 20 different characters that were my students. Yeah. And then I would have my mom buy me teacher supplies. Mm-hmm. And I literally would create a whole curriculum, you know, and we'd be like, why do you like doing that? That's so interesting. And I was like, and how do you do it now? And she's like, I do that now. I teach people now. And even in my HR role, like I love to create these experiences. I love to like work and help people out and deal with conflict in certain ways. And it was like, whoa, man, just even realizing I'm already doing a lot of the work.
Yes.
You know, I remember talking to this one lawyer that was like, I don't play a lot. And then I was like, well, what do you do? And she said, I take groups that hate each other, and then I helped them come to an agreement on something. Mm. And I was like, tell me more. And as she was exploring it, I was like, that sounds like your play. Like that sounded like you're problem solving. You're like, again, you're meeting your skill level and the challenge perfectly. So own the play that you're already doing and then double down on that type of play by identifying those play values and seeing where that might take you. And you'll just have a better experience at your job.
Nice. So a lot of what you do also is helping them identify what their play is.
Right. Or and that's why I refer to it as rediscover your play, because they already have all the answers that they need. I mean, if there's anything that everyone, you know, I would like people to remember from this talk is you have all the answers that you need. Yes. You've always had them. You always will have them. And if you play enough and you tap back into your weirdness enough, you'll rediscover what they are. Right.
Yes.
So have more compassion for yourself, you know, buck societal trends of what should do and what's right and wrong, especially now during these crazy times where really a lot of the rules that did apply don't apply anymore.
Nope. Right? Sure don't.
And, and just have fun enjoying this roller coaster crazy ride. And the other thing that I say to people, because I study a lot of around positive psychology, which is all about like psychology typically up until 1980 was focused on what's wrong with people, and positive psychology is about focusing what's right with people. How do I move people from neutral to flourishing? And there's something powerful they say in positive psychology about how you should allow a whole emotion, allow multiple emotions to flow through you at the same time. Mm-hmm. And an example of that is like when my dad died. My dad died in 2015.
Yeah.
All of his brothers show up. His four brothers hadn't seen each other in like 30 years. Mm. So now I have family surrounding me.
Right.
And I'm at his funeral and I feel joy. Why do I feel joy? Because I have my whole family around me. Oh, that's my gosh. Right. Now I feel guilty that I feel joy because I'm at a funeral of my dad. And then I was like, wait a minute. Like, I can feel joy and sadness at the same time. I can feel anger and hope at the same time. I can feel stillness and be also jovial at the same time. You can feel a lot of emotions like the Pixar movie Inside Out if you just simply allow yourself to feel them and then let them flow through you, because most emotions and most thoughts only last between 9 seconds and 90 seconds. And if you're able to just let it flow through you and let it go, then you'll be okay. And I think a lot of times we hold on to the pain and trauma because we're scared of the unknown.
Yeah.
But the unknown is where all of the goodness and the awesomeness lies.
And to me, that's why I feel there's an importance to lean into those uncertain times, right? Lean into the uncertainty. Of course, it seems a bit daunting at first, but you know, there's only one way to find out how things are on the other side.
Right. And it, and it's
to go through it.
Right. And it's always easier than you think it is going to be.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Because we always, I mean, and then again, it's our negativity bias in our brain that's protecting us, lizard brain protecting us from lions from way back when. Right. Yep. But it's identifying it and just being like, stop thinking of the worst case scenario.
Right.
You know, either if you don't want to think of the best case scenario, think of the most likely scenario. Just let's play with that. Right, and when you think of the most likely scenario, you're like, oh, you know, it's not that bad. Like I can do this because why would I sit in, you know, what is considered like a traumatic relationship with myself where I keep constantly beating myself up when on the other side, this unknown, which is scary. I won't deny that it's scary, but also that's where you can be your full self. You know, it's right there if you want it. And there's people like Aubrey, like this podcast, like the people that are sharing, like your friends that are willing to go down the cavern with you and help you get out on the other side.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's a phrase that we say here, and it's on the road to rediscovery, there are no detours. Mm. And it's so true. And knowing that you have close friends who have gone through it just as much as you have, willing to support you and ride through it with you, you know, that's even more reassuring. So, man, Jeff, I really, really appreciate you sharing those insights, man. Absolutely beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. And I know in the heart of the hearts for my listeners that there has been not nuggets, but boulders of information that you have shared that have resonated with listeners for sure.
Awesome.
So can you tell us, for the listeners' benefit, how can they connect with you or learn more about you and the amazing work that you're doing?
So you can find me at rediscoveryourplay.com and and then my handle is Jeff Harry Plays, JeffHarryPlays, and that's where I make a lot of my stupid videos on Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, you know, LinkedIn, YouTube, all that medium, all of that jazz. And like, you could simply go to my website and like, let's set up a quick 20-minute free call where we just like, let's just hash some stuff out. Let's find out what it is that you want to rediscover about yourself and how we can get there in a playful way.
Nice. Rediscoveryourplay.com. And your handle is at Jeff Harry Plays, right?
Yep.
All right. You heard it there, ladies and gentlemen. We are going to make sure that we have the website and the handle and any other contact links to connect with Jeff on the episode show notes, so you can directly click the links off of those once this episode is released. Wow, Jeff, man, we've covered some great stuff. I'd love to go through a small little segment with you called Three for the Road.
Sure. And
it's awesome. It's where we challenge our guests with three custom, random, yet thought-provoking questions that I challenge to answer in five words or less. What do you think? You might be up for it?
I'm down.
All right.
Five words or less.
Yes. Five words or less. And you know what? Because of the essence of the Road to Rediscovery and the wonderful people that I talk to, whenever we go into Three for the Road, if one of the questions kind of sparks, it sparks a heartfelt sentiment or thought or vibe in something that you want to just convey.
Sure.
And there's some energy you feel. I let it roll, man.
Okay.
Let it roll. Okay.
Got it. But I will try my best to answer in the five words or less.
All right.
Ooh, this is exciting.
Yeah. And my questions are customized. My guests, I don't ask the same guests the same questions.
Perfect. So, yeah. Love it.
All right, so here we go. Three for the road. Question number one. Yours is around play, obviously. what can we learn about life from the elementary game of chutes and ladders?
Ooh. Five words or less. That was six words. I was like,
okay. All right.
Oh, okay. I can answer it. And let me answer it in six words. You know,
you got it.
Whether up or down, continue to play. Like,
love it.
Like, that's the whole thing of chutes and ladders. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Continue to play. All right.
Or the other way I would answer it is enjoy the ride.
Enjoy the ride.
That's
there's a ride going up and a ride going down. Yep.
Enjoy whatever that ride is.
Yeah. Yeah. That's profound for sure. All right. Question number two. What can be said in your mind? What can be said of the Brotherhood team of Mario and Luigi?
Ah, perfect. Two dudes embracing their weird.
All right. I love that too. Yeah, I mean, the color of their outfits, their hats, the overalls.
They're just super weird, you know.
And the bushy mustaches.
Yeah, they don't care.
No, they don't.
Like, this is who I am.
Yep. Love it. All right. And question number three to top off three for the road, Jeff. This is going to be an easy one. Fill in the blank. We play to.
The standard answer is we play to discover who we are. But I'm going to answer it a different way.
All right.
We play to change the world for others.
We play to change the world for others.
For others. And the reason I say this, and this is why I expand on it, is like, when you are willing to show up, you know, fully in your play, the ripple effect is massive, you know? And you will never know. You will never know the impact that you'll have. You just will never know.
That's right.
But you simply being willing to like take a risk and like sharing a really personal story, you know, with friends or sharing this on this podcast, you know, like there's something like, oh, here's a perfect example. It's like by you, Aubrey, showing up to be like, I'm going to make this podcast because I think this is really important. It gave the other 75 people or how many, probably even more people that you've given a platform to share their story. For them, you gave them permission to show up. You gave me permission to show up. And then us 76 people sharing our story is also then giving permission for other people to show up. So like, I can't even imagine how many people you've already affected simply by you embracing your weirdness and being like, I'm going to start this podcast. I have no idea where this podcast is going to go. I don't know what is going to happen with it, but I'm just going to do it. Why? Because I want to. Because it's interesting to me, because I'm excited about it, because it makes me feel alive. And look at the, just you doing you, not even knowing that like tens of thousands of people are already being impacted by this. And hundreds of thousands of people will be impacted by the tens of thousands of people that hear this, right? So it's like,
oh, for sure.
Like give ourselves more compassion and credit when we show up, man.
Yes.
And that is the challenge that I have for your listeners.
Yes.
Are you ready to show up?
You hear that, listeners? That's the challenge. Are you ready to show up? Right? Are you ready for your play? That's right. You know, man, I am I'm a fan. I'm on board with you, man. Jeff, I am totally on board with you. And man, it's crazy. I had a thought and then I lost it. That's okay. It'll come back. But man, I want to thank you so very much for being on the show. We've had a great conversation. The listeners, you know, I know that there's been things that you've said that have resonated with them. I get feedback from my listeners all the time. I can't wait to share that feedback with you. And I remember what I was going to say here, man.
Yes.
Yeah. What you just mentioned, as far as the ripple effect, right? It's two things. It's infectious and it's exponential, right? Mm-hmm. So the feeling to have a heart for service and to help others and to give people a platform to share their story, all in the name of helping others, you know, to me, that it only makes sense, you know, and what I do, and I'm sure a lot of other podcasters can share in this same opinion, but it's a beautiful, perfect storm. Mm-hmm. It's a perfect storm of what excites me, what gets me jazzed up, you know, and at the same time, it's truly fulfilling what I feel is a need for people to have, for this world to have, and it's just my small part of contributing to help make the world a better place.
And that's why I'm so happy that we found each other. We rediscovered who we are through this.
Yes, we totally have. Jeff, I look forward to having a future sequel episode with you in 6 months or so, because I know with the amazing work that you're doing that you are transforming lives everywhere you go. You're leaving them in your wake, a wake of transformed lives. And so there's going to be bigger projects, bigger endeavors, and some major milestones that you're going to hit that I want to make sure I have you back on the show so you can update our listeners on, if that's okay.
Oh, that would be amazing. Thanks so much.
Oh, that's great. Thank you, sir. And I want to thank all of you for tuning in and listening to The Road to Rediscovery. A quick reminder, if you want to have an exclusive heads up on who the upcoming guests are going to be on the show, I highly recommend that you subscribe to our mailing list at roadtorediscovery.com. That's road, the number two, rediscovery.com. The Road to Rediscovery is a movement, a revolution. And guess what? You're now a part of it. We're all roadies on this journey of life. And it sure feels good having you on the journey with me. Thanks again for listening. We'll chat again soon.